Okay. Howdy, Bo. Good morning. Okay. Just making sure you're all here. I guess you are. All perky. We're doing chapter 2, Canto 1, chapter 2, text 23 today. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Oh, thanks. Narayanam Namaskritam. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Sojayam Udirayet. Jam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhakti Bhavati Nastiki. Sorry. Sorry. I can put my jacket on if everybody else wants a fan. It's okay with me. Okay. Stuffy. That's why the air is on. Okay. Before reciting this Srimad Bhagavatam, can we say this together? Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, one should first offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayan, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author, by regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering service unto the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So we're on text 23, chapter 2. Sattvam rajastama iti prakriter gunastar. Sattvam rajastama iti prakriter gunastar. Yukta para purusha eka ihasyadate. Yukta para purusha eka ihasyadate. Dityadaye hari virinchi hareti samgya. Dityadaye hari virinchi hareti samgya. Shreyam sitatra kalu sattva tanor rinam syu. Sattvam rajastama iti prakriter gunastar. Yukta para purusha eka ihasya date. Dityadaye hari virinchi hare samgya. Shreyam sattra kalu sattva tanor rinam syu. Sattvam rajastama iti prakriter gunastar. Yukta para purusha eka ihasya date. Stitya daye hari virinchi hareti samya. Shre Shreyam Sitatra Kalu Sattva Tanor Nrinam Syu. Sattvam Raj. We're going to stop here. The transcendental personality of Godhead is indirectly associated with the three modes of material nature, namely passion, goodness, and ignorance. And just for the material world's creation, maintenance, and destruction, he accepts the three qualitative forms of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Of these three, all human beings can derive ultimate benefit from Vishnu, the form of the quality of goodness. So we're going to go over now to text 26. We're just doing a review to see if you knew that that was the wrong verse. Okay, we're on text 26. Mumukshavogora rupan. Hitva buddha patin atha Narayana kala shanta Vajantyana suyavaha Mumukshavo gura rupam Hitva buddha patin atha Narayana kala shanta Bhajanti yanusuyava. Mumukshava gura rupam Hitva bhuta patin ata Narayana kala shanta Bhajanti yanusuyavaha Mumukshavo gora rupam Hitva bhuta patin ata Narayana kala shanta Bhajanti yanusuyavaha Mumukshava gora rupam Hitva bhuta patin ata Narayana kala shanta Bhajanti yanusuyava. Now there's a special time for anybody whose name begins with an A or a K, if they would like to chant, because they usually don't chant. They take that opportunity, if it fits. He isn't? What's going on? Hare Krishna. Anyway. Okay, chant, please. Please chant. Okay, so we're getting to chant. Mumukshava gora rupam Hitva bhuta patin ata Narayana kala shanta Bhajanti yanusuyava. Thank you. Anyone else? Mumukshava gora rupam Hitva bhuta patin ata Narayana Kalashanta Bhajanti Hyanusuyavaha Mumukshavaha. Persons desiring liberation. Gora, horrible, ghastly. Rupam, forms like that. Hitva, rejecting. Bhutapatin, demigods. Atta, for this reason. Narayana, the personality of Godhead. Kala, plenary portions. Shanta, all blissful. Bhajanti, do worship. He, certainly. Anusuyavaha, non-envious. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Those who are serious about liberation are certainly non-envious, and they respect all. Yet they reject the horrible and ghastly forms of the demigods and worship only the all-blissful forms of Lord Vishnu and his plenary portions. Please repeat. Those who are serious about liberation are certainly non-envious, and they respect all. Yet they reject the horrible and ghastly forms of the demigods and worship only the all-blissful forms of Lord Vishnu and his plenary portions. So what does plenary portions mean? What does that mean? What's that word mean? And so who is it referring to? Portions of whom? Vishnu or, you know, or Narayana in the verse. Right, right. So plenary portions means expansions of Lord Vishnu that have full they have the full potency of the Lord. They manifest in different degrees, but they have the full potency of the Lord. So what does this verse tell us about the attitude of the Vaishnavas? You have to, like, indicate who's going to speak. Yeah, thanks. Stephanie G. Okay, they're respectful and non-envious. That's part of it. I was seeing whose arm it was, but thank you. Clayton. Yeah. Both things are important to understand, that the demigods do represent potency, some of the potency of the Lord. They represent his power to rule, and they are empowered by him. And we respect them. But both things have to be there. But we understand their position, that they're not the Supreme Lord. So therefore, we're not worshiping them. We're worshiping the Lord. Yes? The verse is going to explain, the purport is going to explain that, because there are some that are a little more, like if you see the goddess Kali, you know, or Kali Bhairava with the, and the, you know, she's stepping on somebody. Yes, Lakshmi? Yeah. Yeah. But that's Lord Shiva's position. Lord Shiva being the demigod, he's the protector of the Buddhas, the ghostly, so it could refer to people like him also. Because there's a whole scope of demigods in different modes. Goodness, passion, that people, and the demigods aren't in the modes, but the people are in different modes, take shelter of the demigods, more in the mode of maybe passion would be Bhutapatin. Those would give protection to those ghostly. But the purport will explain a little more, so we'll go there. I'm just going to read the verse again. Those who are serious about liberation are certainly non-envious, and they respect all. Yet they reject the horrible and ghastly forms of the demigods and worship only the all-blissful forms of Lord Vishnu and his plenary portions. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who is the original person of all Vishnu categories, expands himself in two different categories. Namely, integrated plenary portions and separated parts and parcels. Does somebody know the Sanskrit for those two words? It's not given there. Does somebody know the two categories? Lord Vishnu makes expansions. Plenary. It's Svamsa, yeah. Well, there's Svamsa and the Jivas, right? Okay, so what it says right there is that Lord Vishnu expands himself. He has two categories of expansion. These are very broad categories. Some are direct expansions, plenary portions. Those are considered Vishnu himself. And then his separated parts and particles, those are parcels. Those are the living entities. So the living entities, Vishnu. It's a broad category because there's many other categories. Okay? These separated parts and parcels are servitors. And the integrated plenary portions of the Vishnu tattvas are the worshipful objects of service. So what does that mean? What does that one sentence mean? Okay, who's the we? The living entities, they're part of the superior energy of the Lord, but they're separated parts and parcels. Okay, but that's okay. The material energy is part of the inferior energy. But particularly it said something about the separated parts and parcels. It gave them their... What is their duty? Their duty... Yes. Good point. Yeah. The separated parts and parcels are the servitors. They're meant to serve. That's their position. They're meant to serve the Lord or his expansions. Okay? All the demigods who are empowered by the Supreme Lord are also separated parts and parcels. So that means they're also jivas. They're also individual separated parts of the Lord. They're jivas. They do not belong to the categories of Vishnu Tattva. Vishnu Tattva are living entities equally as powerful as the original form of the personality of Godhead. And they, notice that it's a capital T, they display different categories of power in consideration of different times and circumstances. So what are some examples of some names of Vishnu Tattva expansions? Vijayamani? Lord Buddha, okay. Mm-hmm. He is. Estefania? Balaram, okay. Mm-hmm. Andrea?
Lord Chaitanya.
Okay, you only get one choice. Okay. All right, some others? Ramachandra? Prabhu? Robert Akshay, Vishnu, the Vishnus of the creation. Okay, those are Vishnu tattvas. There's also the Leela avatars, and the Sringadeva was mentioned. There's the Vamana, Varaha. There's so many incarnations of the Lord meant for a specific purpose. Okay, Vishnu tattvas. The separated parts and parcels are powerful by limitation. They have a certain amount of power that they can display, but it's very limited. They do not have unlimited power like the Vishnu tattvas. Therefore, one should never classify the Vishnu tattvas or the plenary portions of Narayan, the personality of Godhead, in the same category with the parts and parcels. If anyone does so, he becomes at once an offender by the name Pasundi. In the age of Kali, many foolish persons commit such unlawful offenses and equalize the two categories. So tell me something about that. Those few sentences. What does that mean in your own words? Chaitanya? Okay. And then there was another part to there. That was good. There was another point about someone who's... Gopal? Okay, that's good. But there's still one more point that you would want to put on there from those sentences. Olivia? Right, or to equalize. It's an offense to equalize the two categories because they're not equal. One is the servitor, one is unlimited in power. So, and you put them on the same level, and it's a great offense. It's a great offense to the potency of the Lord, and it's a great mistake to think that the living entity can be that, can be equal to the Lord. That's one of your offenses against the holy name. The separated parts and parcels have different position in the estimation of material powers. And some of them are like Kala Bhairava, Smasana Bhairava, Shani, Mahakali, and Chandika. These demigods are worshipped mostly by those who are in the lowest categories of the mode of darkness or ignorance. Other demigods like Brahma, Shiva, Surya, Ganesh, and many similar deities are worshipped by men in the mode of passion, urged by the desire for material enjoyment. But those who are actually situated in the mode of goodness, sattva-gun, of material nature, worship only Vishnu-tattva. Vishnu-tattvas are represented by various names and forms such as Narayan, Damodar, Vamana, Govinda, and Adhoksaja. So what does those three, a few sentences, that paragraph mean? What does that mean? It's a very interesting analyzation of people and modes. Vaishnava? You could probably, okay.
So people who are in the mode of ignorance worship Kali and Durga. And people who are in the mode of passion, they worship Ganesha and Lakshmi because they are inspired by sense gratification. And people in the mode of goodness worship Vishnu and Vishnu Tattvas.
Right. So Krishna has made this kind arrangement that even if a person is in the mode of goodness, there's a bona fide way for elevation even out of the lower modes of nature. So demigod worship, it's authorized if it's performed in the proper mood. Performed in the proper mood. Oftentimes it's not. Oftentimes they're, and most often, they're actually worshiping these demigods as the supreme person. But if there was the proper attitude that this person is receiving powers from the Lord, then it would be okay, you could say. There's even examples in Krishna Leela of people worshiping demigods for a particular purpose, and it's actually highly honored. Do you know which pastime I'm referring to? Ambika? Govardhan Hill? Are they? Can you hold on? Let's get her straight here. So, who are they worshiping? If they're worship, who? But they weren't. Okay. Yeah. They were worshipping Indra, and Krishna wanted to stop that because they were thinking that they had to offer their respects to Indra, and Krishna wanted to straighten them out, that they didn't really need that. But there's another example. Lakshmi? Yeah, when the gopis were worshipping Katyayani during the month of, around now, I think it was in the fall, right? They were performing a month-long vrat so that they could get Krishna as their husband. Also, there's another instance when it said that the cowherd men once upon a time went to go to Ambikavan to worship Lord Shiva. They didn't do it all the time, but sometimes they did. But the idea is that worship of the demigods, actually even worship of the demigods who are controlling modes of ignorance. Actually, in every bona fide method of worship, there is some worship to Lord Vishnu in their worship, in the worship of Shiva or Kali or whatever. They always have to, if they do it correctly, there's offerings to Vishnu there. And gradually the performer of the worship is meant to realize that I'm not getting my benediction from Shiva or Kali or Chandika. I'm getting, Chandika is getting the power to give me a benediction from Krishna because she's his servant. So that's the ultimate understanding that they're supposed to get from that. But they still, if they're in these lower modes, it's still a way of gradually becoming elevated. In other words, it's not hopeless for anybody in any mode of nature. But the question is, just like it's explained in Nectar of Instruction, in the purport, Prabhupada says that the key factor in spiritual advancement is a proper attitude. So if one has the proper attitude, then one can make advancement in any situation. So we'll continue on with the purport. The qualified Brahmins worship Vishnu Tattvas represented by Shalagram Shila, and some of the higher castes like the Kshatriyas and Vaishnavas also generally worship the Vishnu Tattvas. Highly qualified Brahmins situated in the mode of goodness have no grudges against the mode of worship of others. They have all respect for other demigods, even though they may look ghastly like Kala Bhairava or Mahakali. They know very well that these horrible features of the Supreme Lord are different servitors of the Lord under different conditions. Yet they reject the worship of both horrible and attractive features of the demigods, and they concentrate only on the forms of Vishnu because they are serious about liberation from material conditions. The demigods, even to the stage of Brahma, the supreme of all the demigods, cannot offer liberation to anyone. Hiranyakashipu underwent a severe type of penance to become eternal in life, but his worshipful deity, Brahma, could not satisfy him with such blessings. Therefore, Vishnu and no one else is called Muktipad, or the personality of Godhead who can bestow upon us mukti or liberation. The demigods, like other living entities in the material world, this is so interesting the way Prabhupada writes this here. The demigods, being like other living entities in the material world, are all liquidated at the time of annihilation of the material structure. Now, if that doesn't give you an insignificant aspect of their power, that they're all liquidated at the time of universal devastation. They are themselves unable to get liberation, what to speak of giving liberation to their devotees. And here is the crux of the issue. The demigods can award the worshippers some temporary benefit only and not the ultimate one. So that's the distinction there. What benedictions can the demigods offer? First of all, they can't offer any benediction if they don't get the potency from Krishna. That's also a very important point. They can't offer anything. Bhakti Purushottam Maharaj, he says, their pockets are empty. They have to get the potency, the benefit, the this or the that, even the material wealth, whatever. They get it. When Krishna sanctions it, then they can distribute it. Their pockets on their own are empty. They're getting their potency from Krishna. And so one who's praying to the demigod right there, they're understood to be not fully acquainted with the truth because they're asking for benedictions which are going to keep them in the material world. Give me some wealth, give me a good husband, give me a good job, give me good health, this, so many things they're asking for, and whatever benediction, if they do get it, is just going to keep them cycling in the cycle of birth and death, and ultimately they're going to have to ask for it again. Ultimately, can you give me some more? Because I used it all up. Ultimately, they're going to have to get more. So they can't give liberation from this. They can't give what they don't have. And therefore, when Hiranyakashipu was worshiping Lord Brahma to become eternal, he said, "I can't give you that because I myself don't have it." So he tried in his fertile brain how to get around it. Can I not be killed like this? Can I not be killed by that? And Lord Brahma, he could give all of those benedictions singly, but he still couldn't give him eternal life. Is Stephanie, did you have a question? Lord Shiva can't award liberation. But again, when you talk about Lord Shiva's in a different category. Because here we were just given two categories of living entities, the Vishnu expansions or the Vishnu tattvas, and then the jivas. But Lord Shiva's, he's Shiva tattva. He's in the middle. He's Krishna, specifically for the potency of destroying. Cannot. He cannot give liberation. Okay. Well, okay, but that could... I have this wonderful poster that I've recently come across, which explains the different positions of the Vishnus and the whole structure of the universe. And so Shiva Loka, Shiva's Dham, is above the material world. It's in the spiritual world, but it's on the edge of the spiritual world. So... And the word liberation is a very broad term also, because liberation applied and understood, it's applied and understood differently in different circumstances. Yes, Prabhu? Oh, is it? Yeah. I'd love to get it. Thanks. That poster. Hold on, let's see what Vallabhasain wants to say. Please.
Is it possible?
Good point, and I remember that you've asked that in the past, but it's a good question, because it's not in Kali Yuga we're so bereft of real understanding of how to do these things properly that that's it. There's our poster. It's a great poster. Has so much information on it. Okay, so but in Kali Yuga we're so bereft of understanding of proper consciousness and proper ways and means that in my understanding that it's not even possible to get the benediction of the demigods. That's my understanding. But that's a broad general statement. Would you like to add anything to that? Yes, dear. Oh, wait, hold on.
So
sorry.
He's been patient. Devotees like Shiva and Brahma, are they able to
get? They are able to get liberated. You like Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma, he executes his duty and lives for his tremendous span of lifetime that he gets. And at the end of his life, he's sometimes, not all the times, right? Is he always liberated at the end of his life? No, not always, but sometimes he's liberated at the end of his life and he goes on swan carriers to the spiritual world. And Shiva's in a different category. I can't talk much about him. He's a different person. He doesn't need to be liberated like the conditioned souls need to be liberated. Okay? It's a little different, but my understanding is quite minute on that. But I thought of something else. Anyway, Amrita Kaili? Okay, well, let me just first clarify the beginning statement. This is my example, okay? So it's not a Vedic example, and it's probably imperfect, but it's just like a credit card account. It's like you have your credit card, and you can spend X amount of money because theoretically you have the money in the bank, or you have so much credit, okay? So the demigods are elevated to their position not by chance. They're elevated to their position of administration because of pious activities that they've accrued, okay, in the world of karma, okay? So much different categories of demigods have different qualifications of karmic activity. Just like we've heard many stories of Indra, who's always afraid that some sage performing austerity, and if he performs X amount of austerity, then he's going to be elevated to the position of Indra, and therefore he always likes to send the apsaras down to distract the sage so that he doesn't get to the X amount of accumulation of pious activities, okay? So he, No, we're taking Indra as the example. He got there because he performed 100 Ashvamedha yajnas or whatever. You know, so he got elevated to the post of Indra, so he has so much credit. Okay? So in other words, he has so much power. So he can give within his power, but he still has to be replenishing it. And he needs to understand where his power is coming from. It's coming from the Supreme Lord. Okay, so for example, like when Lord Brahma benedicted Hiranyakashipu with different benedictions, you know, and then what did Hiranyakashipu do? He went out and terrorized the universe in different ways with those benedictions. Then Sringadev had to come and put him in his place, rip him open and everything, okay? So at a certain point, I'm trying to think of what point. At a certain point, the Lord mentioned to Brahma that he shouldn't give benedictions like this, that they cause difficulty in the universe, and you shouldn't give benedictions. Just like also Vrikasura. Vrikasura got benedicted by Lord Shiva. He was the one who was cutting off flesh from his own body and offering it into the fire to please Lord Shiva. Now, like, who would be pleased with arms, you know, or legs? And then ultimately he was ready. He bathed himself. He's ready to cut off his own head. So when Lord Shiva appeared before Vrikasura, he, you know, said, you know, you don't have to do this to please me. There are other ways, you know. But anyway, he gave him his benediction, and then he asked for the benediction. What was the benediction that he asked for? Yeah, I want the power that I can, whosever head I'll touch will crack into pieces and they'll die. So you can imagine the state of consciousness of that person to begin with, right? So Lord Shiva says, okay, he gives it. And then Vrikasura wants to touch Lord Shiva's head and take his wife from him. So anyway, when Krishna ultimately pacifies the situation and pacifies the demon and to a point where he gets him to touch his own head, then the Lord says to Shiva also, you shouldn't give benedictions like this to people who are so much in the modes of... So sometimes the demigods give benedictions that ultimately cause them trouble or others trouble. But they have a certain amount of credit, so that they can give from their powers. They can give, but they have to keep their bank balance up there, or else they can't give even anything. But the other second part of your question was, how is it that if they're elevated to such a high post, how is it that they can forget, or this is how I understood it, that Krishna is the Supreme Lord? What would you... Well, okay, so let's take Brahma Vimohan Leela. So Lord Brahma, okay, what was the position of Lord Brahma? Lord Brahma knew perfectly well that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? Because didn't Bhumi go to Brahma being overburdened and what to do? And Brahma says, okay, let's go to Vishnu. Or let's go, and they go to Vishnu. Vishnu says, I'm going to incarnate in the Yadu dynasty, and you demigods should appear there. And so Brahma knew perfectly well who Krishna was, you know. But how is he accustomed to seeing him? He's accustomed to seeing him in his, you know, majestic forms of Garbhadakshai Vishnu creating the world, this one, Karanadakshai Vishnu creating the universes, Garbhadakshai creating the universe. He's used to seeing worship by the Vedic mantras and so many things in his majestic form of Aishwarya, of Narayan, worshipped in awe and reverence. And then when he sees him as that coward boy, when he sees him lift up Govardhan Hill, he thinks, there's my Lord, he's all powerful. But then when he plays with his coward friends, and the coward friends say, hey, I just beat you in this game, you've got to carry me on your back. And Krishna says, okay, get on my back. And he's carrying, Lord Brahma's looking at that and thinks, oh, that's unusual. That's my Lord. That's the Karanadakshai Vishnu. That's Garbhadakshai Vishnu. That's the all-powerful. And then he sees that, okay, it's time for breakfast. It's time for lunch. Let's sit down. Oh, look, Krishna, my mother sent this samosa. It's really good. Here, take a bite. He already ate half of it, and he gives it to him. Now, how is Lord Brahma accustomed to seeing Krishna eat in the Vedic sacrifices? So many mantras and tantras and so much mudras and pudras and so many things and so many proper worshipped in this way, and Lord Vishnu, maybe he'll eat or maybe he won't eat, but anyway, it's all offered according to a very strict program. And he's seeing somebody just took a bite of a samosa or a sweet ball and just offered Krishna the other half. And then he's getting a little more bewildered. And then he sees the boys say to him, where are the cows? Where'd they go? They went off. He said, I'll get them. And Krishna's got what? He's got rice and yogurt and fruit in his left hand. That's a no-no. You know that, right? Okay. In his left hand, his dirty, moochy hand. And he's eating from his left hand. I'll get them. And he's bewildered. Why is he bewildered? Because that bewildering potency is coming from Krishna. So it's not unusual to be bewildered. It's not beneath us. In fact, you know, Krishna is the cause of that bewildering potency. So he can bewilder even great demigods like Lord Brahma and Shiva. Even Shiva, he's not Krishna himself, he's not the living entity, he's in a whole separate tattva, Shiva tattva. He can become bewildered by seeing the beautiful form of the Lord in Mohini Murti and run after her to embrace her. And then Krishna is so tricky that he had in his form of her as Mohini runs through the forest, and her clothes just happen to be blowing off a little bit, you know. So her beautiful, and you can imagine how beautiful she must have been, right? Because it was Krishna. And so she doesn't just like run to the forest and run. She runs by the ashram of the sages, so that they can see a beautiful lady run by and see Lord Shiva running after this lady. So Krishna has a way of showing everyone, you know, where everyone's at, you know. So Lord Shiva, when he tries to run and embrace the Lord and finally realizes his position, that this is Krishna, he's not at all embarrassed. And he says it in his prayers. I'm not at all embarrassed to have done this, because you are my worshipful Lord, and only your power of illusion can bewilder all the living entities like this. This is you. That's the glory. If Krishna's potency of illusion can bewilder all of us, can bewilder everyone. We're suffering so much. We've tried to enjoy so many times. We haven't really gotten very successful at it, but we're still trying. We still haven't given up. So that's Krishna's potency of illusion. I think there was just a tad more. Okay, just hold on. Don't forget your questions. I have one more sentence, okay? I think we didn't read this last one, okay? It is for this reason only, and that's referring to the sentence before. I'm going to do that again. Two sentences before. They are themselves unable to get liberation, meaning the demigods. What to speak of giving liberation to their devotees? The demigods can award the worshippers some temporary benefit only and not the ultimate one. It is for this reason only that the candidates for liberation deliberately reject worship of the demigods. But here's the important part of the sentence also. There's two parts to this sentence. They deliberately reject the worship of the demigods, but they have no disrespect for any one of them. That's an important point also, because as neophyte as we are, when we hear of the real position of the demigods, we have a tendency to think, okay, these demigods are not important, this, that, and then oftentimes we're very disrespectful. But Lord Chaitanya exhibited the perfect activity when he went on his tour of South India, he visited many, many temples of many different demigods, of Lord Shiva particularly. And every single time he would go into the temple, be very respectful, offer his prayers and glorification of Lord Shiva, and understand who he was in relation, that he was Krishna's great devotee, you know, and offer his prayers. We have the tendency to just do the rejection part to the extent of practically being offensive and not realizing that these people are, they have their position by dint of great purity and devotion and austerity, and they have a service to do to the Lord. And done in the proper way, it's way more than we could ever do. Okay, there was a few questions. Olivia? Well, it is. It's passion and ignorance. It can be mixed, you know. Depends, you know. I mean, people in the mode of ignorance, they're, because Lord Shiva has many manifestations, so they're worshiping there. But
so the demigods, they have material bodies?
Demigods have material bodies. Well, okay, they can get liberation, but just by being a demigod doesn't guarantee them to get liberation. Just by being in that post doesn't come along with the post. They have to make their endeavor. Okay? So it's you get elevated to the position of Brahma, Shiva, or this one or that one. It doesn't automatically mean that you'll become liberated. You have to go make further progress, because those are material qualifications to be to those demigod positions.
So
yeah, Prabhupada says one place I remember, Prabhupada says that when the living entity falls from the spiritual world, the first position that he takes is that of Brahma, and then from there he usually falls further into illusion and death. Thanks. Okay? Michael? Michael, and then, are you a Michael too? In the end there in the corner?
James.
Okay, so Michael and then James.
Can you explain where worship of Guru fits into this?
Worship of Guru is a different thing total altogether, because that's a transcendental position, okay? So the worship of the Guru is, you're worshiping Saksa Dari Tvena, you know, as good as the Lord. Why? Because he's offering you the service of the Lord. So it's a totally different. This is demigod worship is a material thing. You're praying for material benefits, money, wealth, this house, you know, position, and worship of the Guru is required. One can't make progress in spiritual life by going directly to Krishna. It's not the way. The way is through the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas. It's a transcendental position, and they are revealing, giving Krishna. It's a whole different thing.
So should we be considering Guru Vishnu
Tattva? No. Guru is not Vishnu Tattva, but he's a representative of the Lord. He's Jiva Tattva. He's an individual living in it. James? Sorry. Okay. I can only speak from my understanding, which is very meager. Okay? So, my understanding is that the demigods in different... when they're expansions... But see, we're expansions also from Krishna, but we're living entities. We're separated expansions. So my understanding is that the demigods are not Vishnu directly. They are Jiva. Okay, yeah?